Okay, so the last 2 days we had dealt with what Lashon Hara has to do with Mecha'a. I will quickly summarize it, but today we're actually shifting to the Lashon Hara thing, so if for whatever reason you weren't here, you can catch up on share later. But to quickly summarize it, the Gemara had said maybe the position who says that Mecha'a needs to be in front of three is going according to the Shita that Lashon Hara, it's not Lashon Hara if it's in front of three. And what we tried to do is, the last 2 days, is what in the name of God does one have to do with the other? So, the first thing we did was we cleared our minds and said, we know nothing about Lashon Hara, and said, the first thing you might realize is, it could be that this teaches you that Lashon Hara is not about gossip. It's not what the Rambam thinks Lashon Hara is, it's something else. So, for example, Rabbi Chai Gaon and the Ritva, at least in this city, I think is what it means, says that Lishna Bisha Lashon Hara does not mean gossip, it means breach of confidentiality, based on the sugya in Yom HaDavdalit that says that if someone tells you a secret, you cannot publicize it until they tell you this is not secret. And the logic, according to the Ritva, let's say, goes as follows. If Yaakov tells a secret to me and to Ezra, so then it's presumed confidential, we're not allowed to spread it. But if he says it in front of the whole shir, so then clearly it was never meant to be confidential, even though he didn't say, this is not a secret. It's clear from context, it's not a secret because he said it publicly. The magic number at which we assume that he's not intending to say something confident is three, because three is considered public. In that sense, it parallels Mecha'a, because if you say it in front of two, it's still in the realm of confidentiality, so it's not clear that it's meant to get from Andrew to Rami. And therefore, it's not a good machai. If it's one of three, then we learn from the sugya of confidentiality that something is considered public after three, and that's the connection between the sugya. There was also the position of the Yireyim, who said that in the Gemara in Erechin, three statements are linked. One is that something is not Lashon Hara if you say it to somebody's face. Two, something is not Lashon Hara if you're not afraid to turn around and find that the person you're talking about happens to be behind you. Statement three is that something is not Lashon Hara in front of three. From this, the Yireyim derived that Lashon Hara is not bad-mouthing someone, it's only being hypocritical, and bad-mouthing them in such a way that it won't get back to them. But if you're willing to say it to somebody's face, so it might be on Anat Dvarim, the Isser to hurt people emotionally, but it's not Lashon Hara. And therefore, what's the parallel to Macha? Again, the reason you need three is to make it public enough that it is sure to get back to the person you're speaking about. The same phenomenon taps into Lashon Hara. Both of these sheets assume that Mecha itself is not Lashon Hara. However, those that read quotes the Rashbam, and in the Rashbam it seems to be more the shita of his Rebbeim than his own shita, which is that no, Mecha is actually Lashon Hara. What makes it not Lashon Hara? So, there's a rule that if you do it publicly, so then it's not Lashon Hara, for whatever reason he doesn't explain. And therefore, if you do Mecha in front of three, it's no longer Lashon Hara, and therefore it's Mecha, it's less than three, then it is Lashon Hara, and it is not going to work. It could be that he holds like the Urayim, that it may hold like the Urayim, right, or something like that, unclear.
But don't the rabbis hold that even if it's public knowledge, it's still considered Lashon Hara?
So that's what we're going to talk about today,
yeah.
Right? And then there was the shita of Rabbeinu Yonah, who says, no, and this is what Eli had basically said, which is no. Following Tosfos' position that the Gemara in Erechin had said, what is the classic case of Lashon Hara? When you say there is a fire in somebody's house. Now, why is that the classic Lashon Hara? So, according to Tosfos, it is not. According to Tosfos, saying something publicly or privately is Lashon Hara equally. There's only one case in which saying something publicly makes it not Lashon Hara. And that is something which is ambiguous. Because when I say there's always a fire going in his house, I could mean because Rami is in such a good host that he always has guests coming, so there's always a fire going. Or I could mean Rami is a glutton, right? And therefore he's constantly eating. Or he's mifunak and he doesn't like yeshiva food and he sits on cooking his own food because he's just stuck up and, right? So what... So how can you determine whether it's negative or positive? It doesn't say it's very simple. If I say it in public, that means I don't mind that it's going to get back to Rami. I probably meant it neutrally. If I'm going to hide, that indicates that it was probably negative. So Rabbeinu Yonah follows a similar model, and he says, look, there's another time when something could or could not be Lashon Hara, and it's not only whether it's meant as neutral or negative. It could be totally negative. But the question is, am I saying it in order to gossip, or am I saying it as constructive criticism? So if I hide it from him, then clearly I'm just doing it because I want to badmouth him. But if I do it in a way that's going to get back to him, so then it's constructive criticism. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah has two formulations of this. One is that... What? Well, that's exactly the point. Meaning, so what he says is that it could be that, look, if I'm saying it publicly, that means that I want it to get back to him, and I want the social pressure to build, and I want that social pressure to help him change, right? And that's considered permitted.
Could you use that give social criticism for them saying, this is what you should be doing, what he did?
Yeah, exactly, right? But according to Rabbeinu Yonah, if I do it publicly, that shows that I actually care about harnessing social forces to teach people what not to do, to teach Rami what he should be doing, right, etc. But if I did that privately, I'm clearly just gossiping because I'm not getting any of those goals.
Yeah.
So he has two formulations. He says, therefore, if I say it privately, either it's a problem, not necessarily because it's Lashon Hara. It could be that I really did mean it constructively, right? But it looks wrong because I didn't say it publicly, right? Or in his second formulation, it's more important. If you anonymously source criticism, no one believes it. If no one believes it, it's not effective, right? If you put your name on the line, you have skin in the game, then it's effective because people believe you when you put your name out there, and it'll be effective. But if it's not effective, it was pointless, right? So that's Rabbeinu Yonah's two formulations. In both of those formulations, the logic, Mechaa, is very close to being Lashon Hara. It's not actually, but it's the same idea, which is, if I say it privately, what am I accomplishing? But if I say it publicly, that means people are going to tell Rami, and people are going to criticize him, and he's going to hold on to his shtar. So just like by Lashon Hara, it makes it constructive. Is the publicity, what makes Mechaa effective, is the publicity. Right? Fine. So that's where we left off in terms of Mechaa. But then we transitioned to the end of Shir and said, okay, well now, what does this teach us about the primary sugya of Lashon Hara? Not the Mechaa sugya, but Lashon Hara. So, again, according to the Ritva, we have no idea. According to Rav Chaigon, we have no idea. Because the Lashon Hara being mentioned here is breach of confidentiality. We don't know whether, but presumably gossip is usur, publicly, privately, doesn't matter. According to the Urayim, Lashon Hara doesn't forbid me from gossiping ever, unless I'm being hypocritical. But if you think that Lashon Hara is what we normally think of as Lashon Hara, what the Rambam thinks is Lashon Hara is talking badly at somebody else, so then what does this teach us about Lashon Hara? So, seemingly, according to the Rashbam's Rebbeim, if I say Lashon Hara in 3, it's automatically mutter. Why would that be? No idea, right? But seemingly, that's automatically the case. According to the Rambam is a different position, which doesn't seem to work in our sugya, or maybe it does, but I don't know how he gets there, right? Which is that the hetzer goes like this. If you say Lashon Hara in front of three, if Lashon Hara was already said in front of three, okay, let's rewind. When the Gemara says anything said in front of three is not Lashon Hara, you can mean it in one of two ways. One is, if it was originally said in front of three people, it's not Lashon Hara, or if you say it in front of three people, it's not Lashon Hara, right? The Urayim says, if I say it in front of Lashon Hara, it's automatically not Lashon Hara because it's not hypocritical. According to the Rambam, no. It's if it was said in front of three people, it's already public. And therefore, I can spread it further, I can repeat it because I'm not doing anything. But the Rambam puts a huge qualification on it. Because the Rambam says, no, it's not true. There's only one very specific case in which it's mutter. And that is, if by repeating the information, it doesn't spread it farther, so then it's not Lashon Hara. So if it was said in front of the whole yeshiva, so if I repeat it within the yeshiva, it's permitted, right? Exactly, right? So the Rambam just says, the only thing that this rule teaches us is that if something is already public, then it's permitted to spread it. But the Rambam qualifies it by saying, right, you could have said, look, as long as it's public at all, so So now it's mutter for you to spread it to the whole world. Because once it's public and it's going to get out anyways. The Rambam says no. If it's public, you can spread it, but only within the circles who already know about it. But it's never mutter to extend gossip beyond where it is already known. Right? That's how the Rambam reads the sugya. So what I want to do today is wrap up the halacha l'maisa on Lashon Hara and bring it to modern psak. Okay? So, first thing I want to do is take you to the Chafetz Chaim. So, Rami, why don't you tell me the very insightful comment you said about the Chafetz Chaim, because I think you are 1,000% right.
The Chafetz Chaim really doesn't like this...
Very good. Thank you, Rami. So, here's the interesting thing, is that if, you know, you before the Chafetz Chaim, if I asked you, is there any heter to speak Lashon Hara once it's been said in front of three people, I would say, yeah, plausibly, right? The Chafetz Chaim, who is like, you know, his number one belief in life is that gossip, right, Lashon Hara, according to the Rambam, is like the worst thing that has ever happened. The notion that there should be a heter, that you are allowed to ever speak Lashon Hara, is crazy. So what does the Chafetz Chaim do? He basically collects as many chumrot as he possibly can, based on all the shit that we've just seen, and comes up with a super, super, super machmir position. So what does he say? As follows. So he knows, right, that there is this theoretical heter. Oh my God, so many pages, right? He says, Yesh Omrin, Dimechad Siper Genut Al Chavero. Some say that if someone had already gossiped about someone Bifnei Shlosha in front of three, Af Dehu Avar Bevadaya Sur Lashon Hara Vechanal. Even though the original person violated Lashon Hara, right, this is unlike the Oregon, this is like, right, the Rambam. If one of these three people now spread it further, lo avar bazel isur lashon hara. So some say once it's public, and there's no lashon hara. The chavre chavrech itlay. Uvedavara asur letkalot lo asar Torah mishum lashon hara. Okay? So, he admits that someone once said such a thing. But now look what he does to it. Yes, someone. He says, V'davka l'saper v'derech akrai. One, this is only if you happen to say it, you know, sort of off the cuff. Avaloshi itgavein l'ha'avir hakol galote yoter. But not if you intend to spread it farther. So the first chumrah is the Rambam. Afilu im lo yisaper b'shem yishisiper lo. Even if you're not going to say who told you, rag yisaper stam shekach lekach nishma ploni. Right. Even if you say this is what I heard, even if you qualify it and say it's just a rumor, won't help you. Right. So that's qualification too. It doesn't help you to say this is what I heard. Right. Even though you're qualifying it, too bad. Afal pichen inunim lam yisrael shen hara. And then he adds, v'afilu mashihi tarnu. Says, this heter is limited to the first person who heard it, but not secondhand information. Right? The question and qualification is no, because then it's hearsay. So this is only for things that you know, but not if it's second-hand hearsay. Yeah. Now, where does he get that at there? That iser? Unclear. I mean, he tells you where he gets it, but it's very unclear in our sugya. Right?
I mean,
if
you
right? And then he says, right, all types of qualifications that you have to know that it was right true. And then he adds yet another qualification. If You don't know whether the first person who said it, it's now public, but you don't know whether the first person who said the Lashon Hara said in front of three, it's usher to spread. Why? Because since the original person didn't say it in front of three, so now, even though it's public, right, you can't spread it. And then he adds another qualification. This is a crazy one. If one of the three people who was originally said in front of it had any Yirat Shamayim, and therefore is not the type of person to say Lashon Hara, so then you can't spread it. Why? Because the Heter only comes when it was said in front of three people, all three of whom are assumed to be gossipers, and therefore it can be assumed to be public. But even if one of them has self-control, so Memele wasn't public. Now, what's the problem? Is that clearly, if you try to carry this over to Mecha'a, right? Like really, would the Rambam, would the Chafetz Chaim say, if Mecha'a was said in front of one person who's God-fearing? I mean, like, so obviously say, oh, maybe Mecha'a is different, but this does not flow naturally from our sugya. And then he says, not only that, if one of the original three people was a relative of the person that the gossip is about, since he's less likely to spread the information, it's not public. So the heter doesn't apply. Furthermore, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, exactly. My relatives are the most likely to spread. Yeah, fine. Rami's like, if it was my siblings, they definitely would be gossiping about me. He says, and definitely if it's that uncle that we all gossip about, you know? Fine. Then he says, ordinarily, the Dafko Da'ir, and it's only mutter in that city. Avalovir Acheret, but not in other cities, even if there's travel between them, because it's still less likely that it would get from one to the other. And then he adds another one, and this is, I mean, the Chafetz Chaim was a tzaddik and never gossiped. So, fine. The next halacha can only be said by such a person, which is, and if Omer is here, Shalom Lagalato, if the person who said the gossip said, don't spread this farther, so then it clearly is not considered public, and therefore you can't spread it more. Now, I mean, this is crazy. Meaning, the whole point of our Gemara is that once you say something publicly, right, as we all know, the best way to make sure that everybody knows about something is to say, shh, it's a secret, right? We all know this, right? I'm reading Nathan Taleb's Anti-Fragile right now, and he has a nice description of this, right? He's like, gossip and secrets, right, are anti-fragile, right? What's anti-fragile, right? So he says, there's fragile, there's robust, and there's anti-fragile, right? Anti-fragile are things that get stronger the more you try to break them, right? Right? Not, right? It's not, right? He argues that the opposite of fragile is not resilient, right? But it's anti-fragile, right? It's like muscles, right? Right? You work them to fatigue, right? The muscle breaks, and as long as you have enough protein, they grow back stronger, right? That's not resilient, that's anti-fragile, right? They grow based on stressors, right? So two of his examples are secrets, right, where the best way to make sure that something does not remain a secret is to try to, right, is to try to keep it confidential. If you just say information, it might spread, it might not. But if you say, it's a secret, right, exactly, right. His other example, right, is, right, related to that point, is putting something in cherem. He doesn't use that word, right, but trying to ban a book, right, is the best way to sell it, right. Right? That's like, in the Jewish world, the classic example was making of a gadol, right? Yeah, you only love it because it's put in a cherem. It's like a terrible, like, it's a weird book. It's like, nobody read it before it was put in a cherem.
So what is that book?
It's a book written about right? It's like a book about, what is it, Yaakov Kamenetsky, whatever, right? And like, it's sort of eclectic and has like some weird stories and whatever, and like no one really read it. And then someone put it in the cherem because it had heretical things, like Rav Aaron Cutler read the newspaper, or was it someone read the newspaper and someone wrote love letters to their wife. I mean, totally controversial, right? Like there's nothing in there that's like even mild, who cares? But it was put in the cherem because Gedolim don't write, you know, love letters to their spouse, and they don't read newspapers, then it became a bestseller. It's like, please, you went to Reis Slifkin's museum this week. The reason everybody knows Reis Slifkin is because he put him in the cherem, Right? Before that, nobody knew him. It was like a few people knew that there was a rabbi who liked animals and wrote about animals, and he was the zoo rabbi. He was put in the harem by Shlomo Miller and whatever. He's a bestseller. He has a museum, he has books, he has a website. Because gossip is anti-fragile. The more you try to quash it, right? But the Chafetz Chaim says, no. When I spread the information, I said, make sure not to spread it. It's us who to spread it, because clearly we're all going to listen. This is like, to me, an unbelievable... I mean, it shows you how much of a tzaddik he was. That's all I can say. But it's totally unrealistic. I'm sorry. And then he says that even if I know for a fact that one or two of the people in the crowd didn't listen to me and spread the information, it's still up there for me to spread, because Ba'afei Klasa means in front of three people who all spread the information. Okay. One second. What? It would not work. 100%. If you were Mocha in front of the Chafetz Chaim, Rami could keep his land forever. Right? I mean, that's the feeling you get by the end of this thing. I'll be honest, right? I mean, right, you read it, and then he says, and obviously you can't add a word, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Right? And if it was something that was known in the past, but now people don't know about it, you can't do it. Right? And then he adds, and by the way, even once we've whittled down this heter to basically non-existence, it only applies to the person saying it. But anyone who hears it isn't allowed to believe the information. So by the time you read all these qualifications, as Rami said, the only conclusion you get to is that the Chafetz Chaim was convinced that gossip is wrong, and he had to then prove it from the sugya, even though this is a very weird read of the sugya. So how did he get here? Right? How did he get to this? So this is why when people think the Chafetz Chaim, right, is just like a hashkafic work, there's a lot of hashkafa involved. But no, he actually gets, right, he has to go through a lot of halachic argumentation to get here. So how does he do it? So what he does is he says, look, there are, right, he basically combines all the chumrah, and he says, look, Tosef says that the only heter of Apeis Lata is by ambiguous information, right? Which means that if it's actually negative, there's no heter to say it, even if it's public, etc. Right? That's Tosfos. And then he says, there is... He goes on forever here, right? And then he says, right, there's the Rambam's position, right, that even when it is mutter, it's only mutter if you're not going to spread it farther, right? And then there's Rabbeinu Yonah's position that it's only in a case where it's like constructive, you know, criticism and things like that, right? And basically what he does is he says, and then he also goes to the Rashbam's position, right? And he basically compiles all these, takes the chumras from all of them, right, adds a few of his own, right, mixes it all together, right, and you get the Chafetz Chaim, right? But if you read this, you'll see, right, it goes on, if you want to look at the analysis of our sugya, right, it goes from, just look at the footnotes, I won't kill you with it, but the footnotes go, it's all this small print. You understand, right? And obviously, why is this, I think, the longest footnote in the entire Sefer Chafetz Chaim? Because it's the one that most threatens his worldview, right? Because there seems to be this glaring heter, right, of it. Yeah, right, and you see that at the end, right, basically he says, I've explained this to you according to the Rashbam, according to Tosfot, according to the Rambam, and now according to Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? And he goes through it, and he, right? And he brings the chumrot, essentially, of all of them. Okay? So again, if you want to see a full treatment, enjoy. He also then tries to say maybe what does Rashi understand? Okay. But let me talk a little halacha on Isaac. As I mentioned right before, right, 2-3 years ago now already, I wrote a series on halacha on the age of social media. So I wrote about Apei Tlatan. It took me 5 articles to really get through it, right? But, so let me, right, add some halacha to it as follows. Right, okay. Now the Chafetz Chaim, I'll just note, the way he understands the Rashbam, I'll read you my summary of how he understands the Rashbam. I'm not totally convinced, but let's see it, right? The Rashbam is understood by Chafetz Chaim, understands the dispensation offered in this Gemara is for what the Rambam understands as Rechilut. Namely, if A speaks about B publicly, then C may inform B of this. While this is normally Rechilut, when A knows that it might get back to B, it's permitted. Right, that's the only case of the Rashbam, according to Chafetz Chaim, thinks it's mutter. Rechilut, as understood here, is somewhere between a breach of confidence and gossip. Thus, the Rashbam seems to be assuming that if the speaker does not care to the fact that he or she has gossip be kept private, the listener may share the information, even though it may harm the relationship between A and B. Okay? Right, that's essentially the way he understands the Rashbam, and that's how he deals with the Rashbam's position. Fine. And here I'll read you my summary of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim combines many of these sentiments to issue a very strict ruling. First, as mentioned above, he notes that forbidden Lashon Hara said in public is surely worse than that said in private. For the most part, he accepts the stringent view of Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah, limiting the dispensation to cases where the information is not clearly negative, and the very act of saying it publicly indicates the speaker has positive intent. Then he accepts the added limitation of the Rambam, namely that even in cases where the information might be public, it can never be permitted to intentionally spread it further, though, as we have noted, his position is less clear regarding information that is universally known. I'll come back to that in a minute. He further notes that even these dispensations might apply only when the three people who hear the information are not righteous, but if they are or otherwise motivated to not share the information, perhaps because they are friends or relatives of the subject, the information cannot be presumed to be known, and thus it cannot be spread according to anyone. The three people must also hear the gossip at the same time. He also suggests that even when gossip is public in a given place, no assumption can be made about other cities. There, one must assume the information is not known unless one finds out otherwise. Furthermore, he notes that even in cases in which it is permitted to share Lashon Hara, this does not necessarily imply that the listeners may believe the information. They must do their due diligence and investigate what is being said. Skipping down, even if all these conditions are met, the Chafetz Chaim notes that this is at most would allow one to share the information exactly as it was stated. However, to add or spin the information would be a qualitative addition and be prohibited. Furthermore, if the speaker knows the listener will spin it or exaggerate it, the speaker must not share it. Fine. Now, there is a category, however, that is more complicated. And it goes like this. And it gets down to the question of why is it mutter, right? According to the Shita, there is some sort of heter to spread information that has already been said about Beit Lata. Why is that true? So Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg has a complicated argument, which goes as follows. When information is conveyed in front of one or two people, those people will keep it secret. They do not want the original speaker to know that they are responsible for sharing the information. However, once information is shared in front of three people, the potential guilt can always be deflected. Once that is the case, it is inevitable that information will not remain private. Thus, the original speaker will give up, even if unwittingly, on privacy being maintained.
Okay, so you think
there,
that's what you're saying.
Right, this is where Zalman says. Right, Zalman Chaim's argument, and it's based on a sugya in Bava Metziah Chav Vav, which says as follows, that if someone saw a coin fall in front of one or two people, you have to return it. Because if a coin falls in front of one or two people, the owner assumes that he'll get it back. But once it falls in front of three, since everyone can lie and steal it, the owner gives up on the hope of ever getting back. Memela, it's not stealing. right? This is Rizal Nehemiah's argument.
Oh.
A more straightforward formulation,
okay.
And I will quote myself, okay? A more straightforward formulation is to say that once information is public, it is public. That's my way of reading the sugya. As Meiri writes, once the information has been divulged in front of three people, it is as if he said it in front of the entire world. And therefore, it is pointless, right? It's just pointless. Why? And the way I formulate it here based on Chafetz Chaim is as follows. What is the word that the Torah uses for Lashon Hara? Rechilut, right? A peddler. A peddler of information. The logic seems to go as follows. It's only Lashon Hara if they need you to give them the information, because then the metaphor works. But once it's public, they don't need you. Right? It can't be Lashon Hara if you are not really the one peddling the information, because it's already out there. Right? It's like selling air. Right? Oh, okay. Now, obviously, the Rambam, my guess is the Rambam took the argument basically as I said it, and therefore, but then took an implication from it, which is, that's only if that is actually true. But if it's not true, because they do need you, because you're spreading it further, so then it's usher. But if that's the case, then there is a situation the Rambam doesn't deal with, but is very relevant halacha lamaisa, and that is, practically, there's a difference between something which is somewhat known because it was said in front of a bunch of people and something which is universally known, right? And therefore, several posts can take this. So Rav Azriel Ariel has an article on Lashon called Lashon Hara B'Tzibur Demokrati, who argues as follows. In a democratic public. That's the name of the article. Lashon Hara B'Tzibur Demokrati. That's the article. And he makes the argument as follows. The Rambam's limitation only applies b'afei klata. Why? Because saying something in front of three, the reason it's mutter to continue spreading the information is because you assume it will eventually get out. But therefore, if you're spreading it farther, so then it's usher because it wasn't going to get to those people. But if something is a higher madrega of publicity, meaning it's not just that it's said in front of a bunch of people and will probably get out, but it is already public, so then it's universally known and you're literally doing nothing by continuing to spread it. Lamai Nafkamina in modern Tzach, are you allowed to talk about the news when it's critical of someone? According to the Rambam, so if you take the Rambam strictly, you might think, well, if Andrew hasn't read the news yet, I can't talk about the news with him.
No,
the news, like literally the news. Like, do you, right, Watergate. Am I allowed, Naniach, we lived 40, right, in the time of Watergate. Am I allowed to tell Andrew, did you hear about the Watergate scandal, right? So according to Rambam, the answer might be no, because Andrew hasn't read the news yet. Correct. But Rav Azriel Ariel says no. Even the Rambam will be moda that there's a difference between something that that was said in front of a bunch of people. Because, like, sure, it might be common information in Migdal. That doesn't mean that I'm allowed to spread it outside of it. I'm not allowed to put it on Facebook, right? But if something is in the news, so I don't tell, welcome to Ray Grossman.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, you're in the right place. I'm Jonathan Ziering. We were, yeah. Okay. I know Rosh Chait said that his father is coming to talk to you around 11:30. He's usually a few minutes late. So I assume he'll come in there. Yeah. So go in there. I don't, if you want, if you go up the stairs, your Shmuel David is giving shir, so he might know his father's schedule better. So, because his classroom is up the stairs, so you can ask him. You haven't seen Ruchaim Ozer. He didn't like coming on the side.
No.
Okay, so you might want to just ask for Shmuel David. Just go straight up the stairs right here,
okay.
And there's a classroom as soon as you come there, and Shmuel David's giving shit there. You can ask him when his father is coming, and then we'll start at 12-ish. Okay?
Thank you.
Great. Azrael Ariel's look. Maybe all the limitations that we find Bape Plata are only true of things that are public, but not universally known. Because then it makes sense to talk about what the Rambam says. It's mutter to spread, but not spread farther. But if we lived in the time of Watergate, you were going to find out about it within a day or two, right? Meaning, like the example I get, you may not like that President Trump would insult people on his Twitter account. But once it was in his Twitter account, the fact that you now said, did you hear what he said about, who cares? I mean, at this point, it is what it is, right? Like, it is what it is, right? And therefore, Rav Avinair also argues that when something is universally known, this doesn't, it's not usher. The big nafkamin of halakha l'maisa is, as I said, if something's in the news already, or something was posted on social media, right, and the whole, like, even the Rambam might be moda that it's not Lashon Hara anymore. Now, he notes, so Rav Avram Shapira, though, has a qualification. He says, maybe or maybe not. Rav Avram Shapira says, maybe, even in this shita, that's only true while it's in the news cycle. But once it's out of the news cycle, maybe people will know it in the back of their minds, but you are accomplishing something by bringing it up again.
Oh, so reminding of something.
Correct, right? Again, I don't know if this is true, but this is Rav Shapira's argument, is like, right? What's his argument? He says, look, oh, someone was in Total Time, was it?
They
did it? They connected? Okay, fine. If they don't connect, then make sure they connect. And what's his argument? His argument actually makes a lot of sense, which is, I was reading a book a while ago, which said, right, what's the best way to make sure that no one finds out about something nowadays? Right? It's not by hiding it. It's by over-inundating them with information.
Oh, like
right? So, for example, right, Enron, right, the Enron scandals, right, it turns out, remember, you're probably too young, but this is like the beginning of like the collapses of big companies because of, right, like in 2008. Enron was like the classic one. But it turns out that Enron, right, none of the information, people were accusing them of hiding information. It turns out they didn't. It's just that they published everything in excruciating legal detail, so nobody bothered reading it or understood it, right? Exactly. So Rav Avram Shapira says, look, nowadays people are so over-inundated with information, the best way to make sure that a story doesn't hurt you is to just wait a few weeks when people are over-inundated with other things. They may still know about it, but it's not the scandal of the week anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Is it right? It's like, you know, do any of you watch John Oliver? Last week, tonight, no? Really? Older? Oh, anyways. Well, he hated Trump. But every week, this is basically how he started. He's like, in a normal presidency, right, this would have been the story of the week, but he only has to show once a week. He's like, however, since the story I was going to talk about from last Sunday, right, there's another 23 different scandals that have happened, right? Meaning, at some point, you're over-inundated with things. So Rav Avram Shapira says, bringing up an old scandal actually is meaningful. Because even if people know it in the back of their mind, so much happens, we get so much information. So Rav Dov Lior has a different qualification. He says, since Chazal say that after 12 months, people forget things, right? That's why we say Zachar once a year, right? To constantly remember, it's based on that assumption, that after 12 months, you'll forget things. So Rav Dov Lior says, maybe it's only mutter within 12 months. But after 12 months, people forget things, and therefore you're actually accomplishing something by bringing up a scandal. I would argue that that's true of some things, but like, you know, even though Watergate is way before either of our times, we still know what it is. It's like, so not everything falls out of the news cycle. And I would add that maybe even sometimes it's not the right thing to do, even if it's technically mutter, but but what this tells you, right, that these halachot are really important, because if we don't take all the kind of qualifications, it turns out that, like, once things are on social media or whatever, it really might not be usher anymore to spread it, right? Now, you know, if you want, you can go through my articles, right? I really, like, go through different things where, you know, I think we could really qualify a lot of these. So, for example, if something's on social media, I tend to think that it's probably, at this point, mutter, if not always the nicest thing, to continue spreading, at least while it's still in the news cycle, right, as it were. But if something is in a closed Facebook group, yesh ladun, right? Because clearly you're spreading it farther. It may be that practically, even if, you know, it's a friends-only thing, but if you have 1,000 friends, or if I post something on Facebook, right, even if I post friends-only, so is it really going to stay private? Probably not. But on the other hand, it could be that the fact that I try to limit it means that by you spreading it, you are spreading, right? You know, we really have to hammer it out because in the modern world of mass media and social media, right, information really is universally public in ways that might make it that me talking about it is meaningless from this, right? Now, I will note, this is something that I do think is definitely true. Shlomo Rosner in his Alei Be'er makes the point on Chafetz Chaim, and I think he's definitely right, is that he makes the following diuk. He says the heter b'pei tlata is only in front of three people, but not among three people. Now you're going to tell me, wow, you're splitting hairs, right? He says, no, I'm not splitting hairs. There's a difference between among and in front of. What's the difference? Very simple. If I have a staff meeting, right, with the, let's say, six of us, right, and we share sensitive information about one of you, because we have to, about a medical condition, because of whatever, right, which we're, you know, whatever with all the waivers that you signed or whatever we're allowed to talk about, okay, I think we would all legitimately have a taina if we just said, well, we talked about it in our staff meeting of six, so therefore I can post your medical problems on the yeshiva website, right? 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 Or, right, we all understand. Or, you know, if, you know, we have a family therapy session, right? So there are seven people in my family, right? So does that mean if we go to a therapist as a family, now the therapist can say, hey, the information was said in front of more than three people. There's no client confidentiality. No, that's crazy, right? So he makes this very sharp deal that he thinks that Ba'apei Tlata is only mutter in front of three people. What does that mean? Meaning I say information to three people. I'm spreading it. But if we say it among three people, meaning there's a presumption that this is amongst a group because, you know, we're all in therapy together, right, or whatever, there's no presumption of publicity there, right? We're a group, right? We're a group, and we're saying it among ourselves. In that case, just because there's more than three people in the group doesn't create a presumption of publicity. Right, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Or whatever, a doctor shares the sensitive information about the patient with all the other doctors who are involved in the surgery and all the nurses, right? That doesn't mean that everyone wants, you know, the world to know your heart problems, your whatever, right? I think that definitely, right? That's definitely an important qualification here. Now, I do think that the following is the case. Here, I'm going to summarize, right? So as we noted, Lashon Hara might mean confidentiality and it might mean gossip, and Ba'apei Tlata is brought up in both. This is my summary of how the halakha plays out, okay? What emerges from these positions, especially those of Tosfos, Erech, and Rabbeinu Yonah, is that while Poskim are relatively ready to accept that there may be no prohibition against sharing information that's already public, they are more reluctant to permit actual gossip. The Rashbam, though talking about Rechiluk, which is in between, seems to support the general tendency as well. This may be due to their conviction that even if the damage is done, there's an ethical problem with bad-mouthing others. Alternatively, this is something that I want to make a point to you. Okay, guys. This is a very important insight that I think will help shape the information. Rav Daniel Feldman has a book on Lashon Hara that he wrote recently, and he makes, I think, a fascinating point. He argues the reason Lashon Hara is usur is because it's always untrue. Now Gavi looks at me and says, what do you mean always untrue? It's true. But he says, well, one of the, who, how many of you have read Thinking Fast and Slow?
I've heard about it.
Okay. Well, one of the things, right, that it points out is that, right, human beings function at two levels, right? System one, system two. Point is that there are things called heuristics, right? Shorthands that we use intuitively to make life easier. And that's not rational, but it's the way we function. One of the things that emerges from that is something called the devil effect or the halo effect. What's the devil effect or the halo effect?
Where we will either into
we right people we like, we tend to view everything they do, even if it's questionable, in positive light. And people we don't like, we view everything in a negative light. Right? So Ray Feldman argues that once we know that about modern psychology, it could be that why is Lashon Hara usur, not just because it's bad to badmouth people, but because the more you talk negatively about someone, the more, even if it's true, the more you bias the way they view them in the future, even when it's illegitimate. Right? So if someone is mostly good, but he's made one real mistake, right? So if I gossip about him to someone who's never met him, that will forever color the way they view this person, because the first thing they heard about him is negative. So now, from now on, and therefore, Feldman said, it's very hard to ever say that something is really only going to have true effects. Now, based on that, it really makes a lot of sense why even repeating information that might be known could be problematic. Because even if you know the information, the more we talk about it, the more you feed into these heuristics, and the more it colors the way you view them in the future. So even something which is true and known, the more you talk about it, might have deleterious effects that are not fair. Another reason that post-gam might don't like jumping to the head of Bapei Klata is that, as we saw from Uranium, something might not be Lashon Hara, but it might be Onad Varim. Maybe it's not Lashon Hara, but if you badmouth people over and over, it still hurts them, and that may be also for other reasons. Based on all of that, plus the Rambam's qualification that we're only allowed to spread information but not spread it farther, right? All those together do make it the case that we don't jump on the head there of Bapei Klata. But we have to remember that it does exist and it has implications, lahalacha. And therefore, right, as I said, while Poskim are relatively more lenient about sharing information that is already known, as long as the only issue at hand is privacy, they're more reluctant when it comes to gossip. In the age of social media, the reasons are obvious. Even if information is already spread, every new share on Facebook opens up a new circle of friends to the information, which is prohibited according to the Rambam. Even if it does not, sharing may hurt the subject in unimaginable ways each time a new person affirms knowing or caring enough to share the information. Even when things are universally known, the more something is put online, the harder it is to erase from the web, the more likely it is to appear on Google searches, etc. Thus, according to post-gim such as Avraham Shapira and Rav Lior, the act of emphasizing this information may be problematic, even if we assume that it's almost always permissible to pass on universally known information. While earlier post-gim raised these issues, the problems are incalculably more severe in our world of social media. Thus, care should be taken to not misuse this tool, which too easily becomes a weapon. Furthermore, as we've discussed, even in cases where there are technical dispensations available, the overriding principle of Vavzorecha Kamocha should enjoin us to be careful about how we treat the reputations of others. If you want to see all the implications that I drew from this, you can look at the articles. But now you understand, I think, why this is so important. Right, to understand this category, because I really do think that the limit of Bapei Klata, or the lack thereof, is so critical in a world of mass media and social media, v'kadomeh. But that's my summary of the sugya. Let's stop there and take a break. We have a guest here at 12. Okay? And if you're more interested in all the stuff I wrote about it, I sent it to you. You can see, I hashed it out, and I went in painstaking detail, like, how does this play out for Facebook? How does it play out in closed groups? How does it play out on listservs? How does it play out on Snapchat, where the assumption is that the text is deleted after a certain amount of seconds, right? How do you spell it out in all these different information, you know, the chulay? Remind them we have a...